Hello again, and welcome to Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Ron will not be with us today.
And I'm on my fourth cup of coffee.
Well, that's good. She's Jean Marie.
Okay.
Today we're talking about something that is changing how doctors think about heart disease. The conversation between the heart, the brain, and the immune system. This episode is called Heart, Brain, and Immunity, New Clues After a Heart Attack. We'll look at what scientists are learning about a triple node heart-brain-immune loop, how immune responses can help or harm the heart after a heart attack, why some people develop dysautonomia, problems with the autonomic nervous system, and how all of that might shape future treatments.
Most of us older folks grew up thinking about heart disease is essentially like a plumbing issue, clogged pipes, a human or an anatomical plumbing issue.
Yeah.
Cholesterol, plaques, and blockages stopping the flow of blood. But what does it mean to bring the brain and the immune system into the picture so it's not just a plumbing issue, but it's the whole human house or the whole anatomical house?
We're talking about designing houses now.
Yeah.
We double. You'll get it all here. Researchers now talk about the heart-brain axis, the two-way communication between the heart and the nervous system. Through autonomic nerves, which are the sympathetic flight or fight, and parasympathetic rest and digest nerves. Hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, immune signals like cytokines?
You say kines, I say keens.
Okay. The brain influences heart rate, blood pressure, rhythm, and vessel tone. And the heart sends feedback back up to the brain about blood flow and stress.
Okay. A recent review on the heart-brain axis points out that this bio-directional connection shows up in familiar conditions such as stress-induced cardiomyopathy, stroke-related heart problems, arrhythmias linked to brain injury, and even how chronic stress affects blood pressure and heart rhythm.
Well, when you add in the immune system, It becomes a three-way conversation.
Okay.
Inflammatory molecules can affect both the brain and the heart, and nerves can influence immune activity in the heart and blood vessels. That's the backdrop for the new studies that we're going to be talking about.
Okay. Well, let's start with the cell study that mapped out a triple node loop after cardiac myopathy or heart attacks.
Okay. In this research, scientists use mouse models, that's living mice, not computer mice, of myocardial infarction, a heart attack, to trace the pathways that connect heart damage to the brain and back again. They identified three main nodes: TRPV1, expressing vagal sensory neurons in the heart that detect injury; the paraventricular nucleus, or PVN, in the hypothalamus, which is a part of your brain, which is an important control center in the brain; the superior cervical ganglia, or SCG, which houses sympathetic nerves, sending signals back to the heart and influencing immune cells around it.
After a heart attack, those vagal sensory neurons fired intensely, sending danger signals to the PVN,
which is the paraventricular nucleus.
Yeah, these are all good band names. In response, the PVN ramped up sympathetic outflow, and the fight or flight side of the autonomic nervous system, which increases nerve activity in the SCG and alerted the immune signaling, including, IL-1 beta and other inflammatory pathways, and ultimately worsened damage and electrical instability in the injured heart. So it's kind of, it's all connected, and it's your body's response to the damage.
Well, when the researchers interrupted pieces in that loop by ablating or destroying those specific vagal neurons, inhibiting certain PVN neurons or blocking IL-1 beta signaling in the sympathetic ganglia, they saw a smaller infarct size, like a smaller heart attack, better heart pumping functions, fewer dangerous arrhythmias, and EKG changes. So this triple node loop isn't just an interesting diagram. It actually changes the outcomes in their model.
So there could be a new method for treatment.
Right.
You know, medications or procedures to stop the...
Right, to ablate those nerves.
Okay, or chemically. For those of us that aren't scientists, the take home is that after a heart attack, the brain's response and the immune system response can either help the heart heal or accidentally pile onto that damage and cause more damage.
Well, let's talk more about the immune side.
Okay.
What is the immune system doing after a heart attack?
It's going to Disney World. review on cardiovascular immune crosstalk explains that when part of the heart muscle loses blood flow and cells begin to die, the body sends in immune cells to clear the dead tissue and to start repair. And neutrophils arrive first, followed by monocytes and macrophages, which help digest debris and then shift into the more healing mode of the immune system, laying the groundwork for scar tissue.
But if that kind of inflammatory phase is too strong or lasts too long, it can kill neighboring heart cells that might have survived. It could lead to excessive scarring and stiffening, and it can disrupt the electrical system, making arrhythmias more likely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a balance.
Right.
You need the immune system to clean and repair, but you don't want it to overreact.
Yeah. One striking example from SciTech Daily coverage of this and of a scientific study, researchers found that a protein produced by the neutrophils after a heart attack can literally punch holes in heart cell membranes, promoting dangerous arrhythmias. And when they removed that protein in mice, the burden of arrhythmias after a heart attack dropped significantly.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm guessing significantly.
Healthier mice.
Poor mice.
That gives hope that we could someday block specific damaging pathways without turning off the entire immune system.
And that brings us to a Cambridge-led IVORY trial, which looked at boosting a protective arm of the immune system after heart attacks. And we'll have links for these studies in the show notes.
What?
Or on our website? We'll have links to these studies and the show notes are on our website.
Remind me, I'll put links.
Okay.
In that study, patients who had recently had a heart attack received low doses of...
A medication.
A medication that's a form of...
Another thing.
Interleukin 2.
Fill in the blanks here. What do you think it was? It's a mystery.
We could have a contest. Word find. Aimed at expanding regulatory... T cells or TREGs. TREGs are peacekeepers. They help prevent excessive immune responses and calm inflammation.
The social workers and mental health care providers of the heart. The trial found that this low dose medication or chemical or substance could increase TREGs, reduce markers of vascular inflammation. And it was also associated with fewer repeat heart attacks over follow-up compared with placebo administration. So it's still very early in this research, but it does suggest that fine-tuning immune might reduce the risk of future events. And on top of usual treatments like statins and antiplatelets.
Oh, if you think of it visually.
Okay.
Now, you're all thinking, right? traditional cardiology focused mm-hmm. on the plumbing, like Jane right. was saying, the arteries. Yeah. Then we added electrical, which mm-hmm. is rhythm. Mm-hmm. And now we're adding software, the heart-brain immune loops mm-hmm. that control how the system behaves after damage.
Okay. We also wanted to talk about dysautonomia because that's another example of the heart and autonomic nervous system getting out of sync. And we want to know, is it related?
Well, dysautonomia is a broad term for mm-hmm. disorders of the autonomic nervous system.
Right.
I have such a...
Broad term?
Broad term.
You are broad.
Yeah, I have such a problem. And Jean has such a problem. We're both problems. The system that controls things that we don't think about consciously, like heart rate, blood pressure, digestion, sweating, temperature regulation. The Cleveland Clinic notes that dysautonomia can cause symptoms such as dizziness or lightheadedness, especially when standing, fainting or near fainting, rapid heart rate or palpitations, chest pain, fatigue, brain fog, GI issues, let me tell you, and temperature intolerance.
And common forms include postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, or POTS, and neurocardiogenic syncope. And in POTS, when someone stands up, their heart rate jumps significantly, while blood pressure may not drop much. They may feel lightheaded, palpitations, and sometimes have to sit or lie down, or in my case, just fall over. Oh, I guess that's the next one. In neurocardiogenic syncope, also called vasovagal syncope, a sudden reflex causes heart rate and blood pressure to plummet, leading to fainting.
And some people actually have features of both POTS and neurocardiogenic syncope.
Yeah, we're overachievers.
First, a fast heart rate on standing, then, after a while, a sudden drop in heart rate and blood pressure and loss of consciousness. All of this reflects problems in how the autonomic nervous system is regulating the heart-brain axis, including those vagal and sympathetic pathways that we talked about earlier.
And there's growing evidence that in some forms of dysautonomia, especially POTS, after like an infection, for example, like long COVID, neuroimmune mechanisms are involved, with inflammation affecting nerve control and blood vessel tone. You got to tone up those blood vessels. So while dysautonomia is different from a heart attack, both involve the same autonomic circuits and sometimes similar inflammatory signals and responses.
And the brain-heart immune story doesn't stop at heart attacks and dysautonomia.
There's more.
That heart-brain axis review points out that I need to put commas.
So you can naturally pause.
The heart-brain axis review, pause, points out that these connections show up in common conditions like stress-induced cardiomyopathy, which is called Takotsubo. Okay. While intense emotional or physical stress leads to sudden heart weakness. Certain arrhythmias that are triggered or worsened by autonomic imbalance, heart dysfunction after a stroke or a brain injury.
And in heart failure, chronic activation of the sympathetic nervous system and...
renin angiotensin system. I got to look that up. That sounds interesting.
Another good band name. Along with ongoing inflammation, becomes a vicious cycle that worsens when heart function over time. So the idea of calming down overreactive nerve and immune responses isn't just theoretical. It matches what we see clinically in several different heart conditions.
Well, let's bring this back to day-to-day life.
Okay.
If someone has had a heart attack uh-huh. or lives with dysautonomia uh-huh. or another cardiac condition, mm-hmm. what can they take from all this?
Well, they can, first of all, realize that it validates that symptoms like racing heart, dizziness, brain fog, or crashing fatigue, it's not just all in your head, but It may reflect autonomic imbalance or neuroimmune changes, and isn't just, you know, anxiety. And second, it reinforces that caring for your nervous system and inflammation through, you know, things that you can actually control or help control, you know, like trying to get good sleep hygiene, reduce your overall stress, and learn coping mechanisms to deal with stress. And then increasing your movement is tolerated, and managing infections or autoimmune issues. Those are all part of heart care, not just immune care or, you know, nervous system care or mental health care. They all play in a role.
Okay. Third. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you did first and second. I'll do third.
Okay.
The heart attack recovery isn't just about surviving the initial event.
Mm-hmm.
The weeks and months afterward are a time when this heart-brain immune loop is still active, and cardiac rehab, careful medication use, and follow-up can help steer it toward healing instead of chronic overactivation.
Okay.
For people with dysautonomia, working with clinicians who understand autonomic disorders, sometimes in cardiology, sometimes in neurology or specialized clinics, can help tailor fluids, salt, compression garments, medications, and pacing strategies.
And if you want to talk about this with your healthcare provider, here are some possible questions that you might want to ask.
You might ask. Yes, you might.
Okay.
Do you think my symptoms could involve autonomic dysfunction or dysautonomia? And should I be evaluated for that? Or you could ask, after my heart attack, how are we addressing inflammation and nerve activity, not just cholesterol and blood pressure? Another question would be, would cardiac rehabilitation or a specialist in dysautonomia heart-brain axis issues be helpful for me? And lastly, are there any clinical trials here for therapies targeting the immune system or autonomic nervous system after heart attacks?
And if your healthcare provider hasn't heard of some of these specific studies, well, that's okay. They might not be up on the latest mouse studies. You can still use the basic idea that, you know, you've heard of nerves, inflammation in the brain, and that they play a role in heart disease, and ask, how do these things affect your overall care, and what can you do?
Okay. Because we like to be part of our healthcare.
Yes.
We're proactive.
Sure.
We're learning that the heart is not just a pump isolated in the chest. It's part of a network with the brain and the immune system that can amplify damage or support healing after a heart attack. And that same network shows up in conditions like dysautonomia.
And as research continues, treatments may move beyond just, clearing out those pipes, or modulating nerve pathways and immune responses as well. And for now, understanding that connection can empower you to ask broader questions and seek care that looks at the whole person and not just the singular heart organ. And she's going to turn her phone off so it stops dinging.
That wasn't me.
That was you.
Okay. This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast. Till next week.